Welcome to the Scam Economy with your host, Matt Bender.
Welcome, everyone, to the Scam Economy. I am your host, Matt Bender, and it's a pleasure to join you. It's been a few episodes. This has been the first episode, I should say, in a few months, if you're a regular listener of the show. And if you're not, then welcome to Scam Economy. You notice absolutely no difference. On today's show, we're going to be talking about, what else have you been paying attention to what's been happening in crypto? Bitcoin goes up and all the other cryptocurrencies go up with it. Crypto is having a bit of a resurgence right now, price-wise. Price-wise, let me stress. So crypto's having that resurgence. We'll dive into that. And also, we'll talk about the AI hype machine. That's been the subject of a few of the more recent episodes of Scam Economy, as that hype machine rolls on. And joining me, though, to discuss all of this on today's episode, I am really pumped to have Ed Zitron back on the show.
I'm back.
Welcome back, Ed. I could not believe how long it's been since you've been on the show. It feels like I spoke with you maybe like 6 months ago, but I was looking at the last time, and it's actually been over a year. You were on the January 20-something episode of Scam Economy in 2023.
Which is crazy. I thought it was more recent, too.
Right.
But
can never happen again. This can never happen again.
We must talk more than ever.
Oh, woker than ever. Well, you do now have your very own podcast called Better Offline.
Yeah.
Part of like the Cool Zone Media. Cool Zone Media Network. Everyone knows Cool Zone Media probably from Behind the Bastards, a very popular podcast. And
I'm on the latest episode as well about Steve Jobs.
There you go.
It's part of a 3-part episode about Steve Jobs. It was a stinky little goblin.
We'll have to get into Steve Jobs. We could get into that in just a moment, but I think we should start. I feel like if you're on this show and it's Scam Economy, we should at least start with, and it's the big news right now in tech media and finance media. The crypto bubble is bubbling again.
It's inflating.
Right. And we should stress, I think when I launched this podcast in early 2022, crypto hype was at its height. And so in not just like people's crypto wallets, I'm talking about like the media covering it, like the mainstream getting absolutely brainwashed with crypto coverage left, right, all over. And, you know, I felt like it was important at that time to really like get out there and stop, you know, the normies from losing all their money as the crypto hypers tried to get them to put money in so they can cash out. Right. I'm not worried about that quite yet happening again. But, you know, you are. You think that's going to – I think we're too far from that. It's too close to – this is my opinion. We're too close to the last bubble burst with FTX and all the crypto companies. I think that's still in people's mind. I don't think and I don't think the bubble has bubbled up enough yet. But you think differently. Explain.
The Atlantic. Why crypto just won't die? Like we're repeating the cycle again.
I've said that myself though. Not why crypto, but I've always warned people that like you know. Crypto's not gone anywhere. Like these companies are still there. They make tons of money. They're not gone. Like just when like right after the bubble burst and people were like, oh, I guess we don't have to worry about that anymore. I was like,
you would have to do something about it to make it go away.
Right.
What happened was they just went quiet.
Right. So that was like my thing push. I was like telling people, you know, maybe you don't have to worry about it on like your top 10 lists of things to focus on right now, but don't write it off. It's not gone forever. So that's why, you know, I'm not surprised by that coverage. I just don't see, like, the main just not even talking about the media, like, just people talking about it in the same way they were in 2021 and, like, the first half of 2022. But maybe I could just not be talking to
the right
people.
Is doing NFTs, man.
Coachella's doing it?
Here's the thing. If Bitcoin stays above like 65 grand for more than a few more months, we are going to see articles that are like, Bitcoin's back. Maybe Bitcoin's good. With the ETF launches, people are like, oh, maybe Bitcoin's a respectable asset now. What's insane is that we have ETFs for an asset that is directly price manipulated. The same guy who said he did the research that said the 2017 Bitcoin bull run was market manipulated said the same thing happened in 2021. Most of the mining power of Bitcoin is in nations that I don't think we're really great about trading with. It's so bad. It's all very bad. And a load of really annoying people are going to get rich, which is annoying as well. That's not the worst part, though. I just think that this might be the one that washes people out. If we go anything above 75 grand, we are going to be in the so back territory that's going to lead a lot of people to ruin.
Yeah, I could see that. I think, you know, I do think there's a... I'm still looking on the positive side that last crypto bubble burst was so close that I do think, like, you know, mom and dad are not going to get into it. Like, you know, maybe they would have, they did last time. Because too many people have, you know, that bad taste in their mouth still. Too many people lost that money. But, you know, the get rich quick hypers and the people who dream of being entrepreneurs and stuff, you know, I'm sure they'll jump back into it even if they lost thousands or tens of thousands. I just don't see, like, you know, the retirees jumping back into it quite yet.
But did the retirees ever jump into it? Or are they going to be the ones that go into the ETFs?
That's also, you know, if they're you know, they're whoever they invest with buys the ETFs, then yes, I could see that being an issue for sure. Can you actually talk a little bit more about that for people who aren't familiar with this? Because that obviously has a lot to do with this recent bubble. What happened with Bitcoin with these ETFs that could be, you know, sort of perpetuating this, you know, most recent, you know, number go up?
So what it is an ETF, an exchange traded fund. It's basically a bucket of securities. And in this case, an investment group, I don't know exactly who, buys a chunk of Bitcoin and then lets people buy exposure to it through their ETF. This required a bunch of legislation with the SEC, that has now become legal. So there's been a bunch of buying power in Bitcoin. Now,
so people can basically invest in Bitcoin by not actually holding Bitcoin, but by investing in this sort of like grouping that holds Bitcoin.
Yes. And I'm not really sure how this is better, nor how this is. It's just kind of like, oh, good. There's other ways to chop my fingers off. There's another kind of knife.
I guess older people can't accidentally lose their Bitcoin this way by forgetting like the 12-word passcode secret key to their wallet, their crypto wallet. Maybe that's the one upside, but everything else that's the downside is still
there. It is a bunch of legitimate money going into the ecosystem, right, which is not good. It's not good. It's not good. The price of Bitcoin is manipulated. We've established this. There are multiple different crypto exchanges that have billions of dollars of fake volume that control the price. And nobody... Here's the thing that's really, really frustrating me right now, is all these people are like, Bitcoin, crypto is back. Yeah, look at this. Nothing has changed. They've built nothing. Absolute. The Bored Ape Yacht Club started their whole... What was it? Their Other Side Metaverse. And it looks like... I used to review MMOs for a living. It looks like shit that I was reviewing in 2008.
Right. I think World of Warcraft in 2008 looked a lot better than that. World of Warcraft in like 2000, whenever it launched, what was it, 2006? Four? Yeah.
I can't remember.
It looked better at launch than this. I mean, all right, you know, we could say that. It's a big company. Blizzard was behind Warcraft. But the point is that, like, they had all this time.
Yuga Labs has a higher valuation than Blizzard did when World of Warcraft came out.
Right. Yuga Labs is huge now. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
They're worth like $4 billion based on their last funding round.
Right.
Like, this is the thing. These companies don't build anything. Chris Dixon puts his bullshit book out about, a read, write, own? I think it is.
Yes, I think that was a
bucket of bullshit. Right. God bless Molly White for
I'm going to have her on to talk about that book.
Absolutely. But that book, she makes the point that he doesn't actually have any use cases for crypto yet.
This is a guy whose job is it to literally, he works for a VC firm specifically heading up their crypto investment, like investing in crypto companies. And he couldn't come up with a use case for it.
And that's because there isn't one, because it's bad software. It's never been good software. It doesn't do anything other than create new forms of sweatshop labor in the Philippines. It's extremely grim shit, and it's just very frustrating because I genuinely believe that if we have another massive bull run, if this is the one which goes up to like Bitcoin over 100 grand, people are going to lose their fucking shirts. And I don't think people realize how bad it will be, because already when it started going up, there was a massive outflow of hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars leaving the ecosystem. That should tell you everything about what this is. And while they'll claim that this is legitimizing, I have just reached a point where I don't trust any of these people at all. I just don't trust them. They've built nothing. This period since, let's call it November 2022, this was the time to impress me. This was the time where money was not the problem, where you weren't pulled by the throes of capitalism. And now you can build something. I will build. It's time to build, to quote Andreessen from 2020. And nothing was built. Nothing. The other side has come out, the Bored Ape Metaverse, and it's just... What's really actually annoying about that is that I can't play it without a Bored Ape or without buying land, and I won't put $300 into this. I can't do it.
Oh, that's all you got to put. That's all you got to put into it.
I think
now?
You have to buy like a piece of land, and then you are allowed to access it. But you won't appear as a special ape unless you buy a Bored Ape.
Right. That still costs a pretty.
Yeah, they're still cheapest Bored Ape. Let's take
a
look.
They definitely fell in value, but not enough because I mean their real value is zero. They're a piece of JPEG. But I mean they're still.
Weren't
worth...
they meant to be the future of IP?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a good one though. You ever hear of Doodles? Doodles NFT?
Yes.
So Doodles was great. For years, Alexis Ohanian was beating off in front of journalists, not literally, sorry, Alexis, saying that, oh yeah, this is the future of intellectual property. It's like buying a piece of Disney. And then, I think it was March 2023, the CEO was like, we are no longer a speculative asset. We don't deal with any of that. Doodles is yet to create anything. Every so often, I like to go into the Doodles Discord and say that Hap, who's the main guy, has been killed. And they all get very angry, and I just leave, and I'll do it again in a few months. And I know it sounds horrible to make fun of people for this, but at the same time, if you're in a special Discord to talk about Doodles, I can come in there and tell you that Hap got killed outside of Kandahar. I'm perfectly allowed to do that. But also, this thing's still fucking exploitative. It's still as bad as it ever was. And it's like, what's going on? Why are we even humoring this? Why are the articles not out there going, why is this worth this much?
Right.
I realize that CNBC, 90% of their traffic is just posting Bitcoin is high or Bitcoin is low. But someone else needs to post something and say, hey, what the fuck is this? Nothing has changed. This is the same shit that Sam Bankman-Fried got rich on.
Right. You know what? You know, the thing is, like, the ETF thing happened. Like, the Bitcoin ETF was, you know, accepted by the SEC. It was a couple of months ago now. This isn't like a direct effect that, like, you know, this went live and Bitcoin speculating off how that'll be good for Bitcoin went up. Like, this is a extremely delayed reaction. So it makes me think that, like, it's not so, you know, I'm sure it plays a role, but it doesn't seem like it's the direct correlation. Like, something else is going on here.
And I think that... it's kind of like the many times before. We don't really know why the values go up. We don't really know yet. And maybe it is that there's now billions of dollars of real money in this. Maybe that's what it is. But at the same time, why does it keep going up from there? Is it retail investors? Is it Coinbase who crashed the moment the prices went up? By the way, that happens every time. The moment the prices are high and people go, oh, I'm going to sell my Bitcoin on Coinbase, it's like, sorry mate, unplug the server, sorry about that, let me go check it, oh, it's working again, very slowly. That's That shit is what really begins to jokeify me. That's when I'm just like, why do the rich not have these controls? Why can they do this? Why? Anyway, I'm going a little bit insane.
No, I think that's, I don't even think it was just Coinbase either. I swear I saw another crypto exchange also say they went down today. Why, you know, it's interesting that this always does happen. These exchanges have no issues when, you know, everything is kind of dull or number goes down. And then all of a sudden, you know, the price is rising. And, we're down for a few hours. I mean, they can say that, this is happening because the influx of people, you know, obviously the number's going up, more people are coming in to cash out. But, I mean, these are huge companies. They should, by this time, March 2024, have systems in place to account for this influx of users during these periods. The fact that this consistently happens, I mean, what are they doing here? Unless it's, the most ignorant problem to have. Like, just, this always happens and we just never get around to fixing it. I mean, if you want to believe that, fine.
That's because the entire crypto industry is run by fucking scam artists. Like, that's the thing. That's what's happening here. There are no regulations that give any kind of SLA for a crypto exchange. They're not really regulated. The SEC has threatened people, and I think they've sent the Wells notice, and there's the whole thing against Coinbase. Very bad, but nothing is happening yet. And until something happens where there should be some form of SLA with customers, they should have a service level agreement that says you can't just go down whenever this happens. That, to me, feels like something fraudulent. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's innocent. Maybe it's just the fact that selling into the market is harder. But surely they could operate against that by having liquidity that's actually on site, which doesn't require an internet connection. I don't know. Something doesn't feel right about any of it. And it keeps happening because no one and no one in crypto polices this. There is no CEOs in crypto who are like, hey, maybe we don't need this. Right. Maybe we need Coinbase to be better. Mark Andreessen isn't saying shit.
Yeah. I will say it's interesting that, I was looking around to get some sort of answers as to why now, what's going on. And I will say it's interesting that I think it was just yesterday, Tether printed its 100 billionth USDT. There's now 100 billion Tethers out there. I mean, that's certainly an interesting occurrence.
Just nothing happening to Tether either. Just Tether's coincidence. They just print money and it's fine. And that money is going into Bitcoin, which is raising the ETF price. It's just... Right. I haven't written a lot about crypto recently because there wasn't a ton to write. But also, on some level, every time I wrote about it, I was like, I am just repeatedly screaming. I did an episode on Better Offline about the Winklevosses, who are now allegedly going to return the $1 billion of money to earn customers, though it's not clear where that money's coming from, and it's contingent on the bankruptcy courts approve again.
Maybe they decided to deal with Tether. Suddenly a billion Tether showed up.
We'll just go into the USDT reserves. But every time I think about it, I just get annoyed because it just feels like the bad guys are winning almost every time. Like, the people that are getting rich here are not like, it's not like the people who had their money in this who lost last time waited until now, though they probably sold so that they had some liquidity.
And they sold at the bottom, right?
They sold at the bottom.
The most recent bottom, yeah.
And it's like, the people that are going to get rich here are the people who could afford to hold. And it's just, my big worry, and I've said this a few times, is that the next bull run is going to be the last and the worst. It is going to be a massive run that gets in all of this retail investor money, and then it's going to shit itself down. I think stay with me now. Do you really think that if Bitcoin goes like 75, 85 grand and stays there, do you think the media is going to go, let's not get ahead of ourselves, all right? Last time this happened, it lasted like 6 to 12 months. We need to be hesitant. We can't really be pushing people on this. Or do you think we're going to get 900 different articles about, if you invested in Ethereum a year ago, you would have made this much money? I think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a bigger, nastier, uglier bull run that hurts people so much more. Maybe this is it, maybe it's not, but it certainly looks like it. Bitcoin's worth, what, $60,000+? Why? Why is it worth that?
And it happened very quickly. But also, I want to stress again, because I know the crypto fanatics and the Bitcoin maxis are listening to this, and they're going to be saying it's because of the ETF, obviously. But again, when did the Bitcoin ETF even get approved?
No, I genuinely think the Bitcoin ETF could be a part of this.
It's definitely a part of it, but it's not the direct.
They launched about a month ago.
2 months ago in January, early January.
Yes.
So, I mean,
it's plausible that this could be it, but at the same time, the Bitcoin markets have never really been attached to logical influx of capital before.
And I would have believed there was a closer correlation to right now if it was like, oh, you know, since it got approved, it's been slowly, you know, going up, but the approval, nothing really happened for weeks and weeks after the approval. And then in mid-February, it starts to go up a bit. It goes from the 40s to the 50s.
Pushing back a bit, that could be how long it took for the real money to go into the system.
Okay, that's a good point.
I don't know, but that seems plausible.
Right, that's
a good
point.
I'm not saying it's right, but if you put billions of dollars into an asset, it will probably increase in value. It sucks. It's the ultimate con. Tim Draper's probably really, really, really rich right now, which I think should make everyone very sad. Should make everyone very angry and sad. Now, if I was being like one of the like Dirty Bubble Media brain, like Bergersberg mode here, I would think, wait a minute. Suddenly the Winklevosses are able to pay off $1.1 billion just as the price goes up. Isn't that weird? I don't think these two things are connected. But those fuckers are even richer than before. How bile inducing. The bad guys are winning again. And I worry about this. It could crash right back down. It could be at $50,000 in a week, could be at $30,000 at this rate. Or it could now go all the way up to 100 grand and people will think, oh, this is what they were telling me before. People are stupid. I live in Las Vegas. People have magical thinking. They'll think that the last time was when all the bad bettors were washed out, but this time the golden ones will succeed. Now Bitcoin's legitimate. Now Bitcoin will be held by ETFs. I don't know about that. I think that things could go, if when they go poorly, they go really poorly this time. Now the other argument could be, well, there's no more Sam Bankman-Frieds. We've got rid of the bad guy. We got rid of the guy who was crapping out everything. We still have plenty of whales who will dump out. And what? How long have we got until the halving? Let's see. Bitcoin halving timer. We have 39 days, roughly, until the halving.
Do you think this could be part of it too? Like the Bitcoin insiders, you know, trying to get ready to, you know, get the price to a place where they want to cash out before the halving or something like that.
I think the halving is what they're going to try and justify this as. I think it's more likely just more market manipulation.
Right.
And it's insane we don't know. It is completely insane we don't know. We should have a better idea of how this insane asset class works now. We should really know that, but we don't. We don't know. And I don't know if the halving actually affects pricing. I don't think, I don't think it actually did anything last time. Like the justification was, oh, several years after the halving, the price went up. And it's like, at that point, you're just doing more magical thinking. It's just very frustrating. I don't like it because nothing has happened. Nothing changed.
Right.
It's actually really strange.
Can you actually, really quickly for the audience who might not know, quickly summary, really a couple sentences, what the Bitcoin halving is and what it's going to do?
So every 4 years, it's a certain amount of blocks, the number of Bitcoins that will come out of a Bitcoin block when it's mined will halve. So at that point, less Bitcoins will be created to the point that there is just a minuscule amount of Bitcoin being created with every halving. So every 210,000 blocks on the Bitcoin blockchain. And the theory is that due to this being a more scarce asset, it will increase in value. This has never really actually come to pass. Like, it doesn't seem like it's affected it before. But also, the other thing to remember is Bitcoin drags the price of every other cryptocurrency up. So this bull run is going to be big for everything and everyone. Like, Ethereum, what, Ethereum's over $3,000 now? It really
yeah,
is.
Ethereum,
like,
Ethereum was going, it was, you know, I even saw, like, even, like, some of the bigger meme coins, like the ones that like survived, like Shiba Inu coin, the one that's like a ripoff of Dogecoin. Yes. That was going up. I mean, Dogecoin obviously itself was going up. All these things are, like you said, tied to the hip with Bitcoin.
I don't know. It just on one hand, I'm like, don't invest in this. On the other hand, maybe it'll keep going up, but it sucks. It sucks so much. I just hope it drops before all of the newspapers decide that they want to pretend this is for real.
Like, yeah.
That's my big worry here. Because right now, I think you're right in that people are still burned from the Sam Bankman-Fried side. But I worry that the existence of ETFs is going to justify this industry and legitimize it. And then we're going to... We'll see if Andreessen Horowitz starts up the money machine again.
Yeah, it's certainly something to watch out for. Like, I, you know, we're not in the lull period we were over the past, like, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 months even, maybe. Like, not much was happening in crypto over the past year or so, really. You know, at least when it comes to affecting the you know, retail investor or people even thinking about jumping in and becoming an investor. But, like, now is certainly this is, like, the time period right before the last bubble jumped into the mainstream. And then everyone was putting their stimulus check from COVID, the COVID lockdowns. They're putting their stimulus checks into crypto because they were hearing everything going on. We're in that period right now, that period right before people like your brother or sister or mom and dad, your non-tech savvy family members and friends are all of a sudden saying, hey, I just invested in this. What do you think? Did you look at this? Did you see this?
I don't know. Do I even want it to crash? I don't even know at this point. It all just feels very strange because it didn't climb up connected to any publicly seen events other than the ETF. It all feels very strange, and it climbed very fast as well. I don't know. The whole thing stinks to me. It doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense before, but it really doesn't now. And what is going to be the real canary in the coal mine here is going to be if you start seeing big media articles. If Kevin Roos writes another New York Times piece, and I give Kevin respect because he grilled Chris Dixon like a burger on Hard Fork podcast. He actually went for his ass. Casey Newton made him back down. Casey's a coward. Sorry, Casey. You let Kevin cook. Kevin Roos burnt Chris Dixon. You should go and listen to that.
I gotta check it out.
If fucking Kevin Roos decides he needs to do another maybe crypto's good this time thing, or if anyone else at the Times does that, they are going to lose people money. And all of these people saying, oh, have fun staying poor. Oh, we were right the whole time. What were you right about? That Bitcoin was worth money? No, none of these crypto people have built anything. There's nothing. Right. I've been watching because I wanted to see what they do without the worry of the public, without people wondering whether it would be worth something. And they built nothing because none of these people build anything. They're all con artists. It's a fucking joke.
Yeah. What's interesting, you brought up how, you know, we were talking about this right before we went live, too, about how, you know, the crypto people are, you know, going at the critics once again after they were really quiet for the past year or so, really backed down, just had nothing really on their side to argue. But then all of a sudden, number goes up and they're back out there saying, like, oh, funny how wrong you were. And first of all, like you just mentioned, nothing was created. The price is just going up again. If your whole point was Bitcoin would go back up again, okay, that's not really what you guys were arguing. But then on top of it, like many of us always said too, that like it's not dead, it's not gone. Like this is just another quiet period. Like there has been over the past like decade and a half where things die down before they bubble back up and there's another bubble. But also, like, I would say the critics finally started getting like the Molly Whites out there really started to get the credit when they came out and criticized it when Bitcoin was at its height. Because we were warning people about what was going to happen based on previous times, except this was the first time that it really made that crossover to the mainstream. So there was a very large, whole new audience to that message. And like that was like when the critics were at their loudest with the same criticisms we have now, when the number was almost at 70K for Bitcoin last time, when Ethereum was hitting 4K last time, when all the meme coins were sprouting up, promising everyone that this was going to be the meme coin to get them rich, like Dogecoin made a few people rich. You know, people might have heard about that Dogecoin millionaire that everyone spent so much time on in the media, CNBC covering the guy, the Dogecoin millionaire, the guy who put like, I don't know what it was, like a couple of tens of thousands of dollars, some of it even like took out of a loan or whatever. He went all in on Dogecoin and he became a millionaire because number just happened to go up not long after he started investing. And, you know, no one ever went back to the story to tell the rest of it, how he never sold. And he just holds all this Dogecoin now, and he's not a millionaire. He's not even close. Maybe he's still in the green, but not as high up as he was before. It depends when he bought. I have to look that up. But he's not a Dogecoin millionaire anymore. But you didn't hear, you know, the news coverage of that. You know, I would love to know how many people who were covered by the media as these big crypto success stories actually just never sold and just were paper rich and never had anything and never sold. So they never got out when they should have. But now I'm wondering also, like, you know, you mentioned earlier how many people, you know, sold at a loss prior. I would be interested to see how many people who lost so much just deemed that it wasn't worth it to even sell and just held on. And now they're able to maybe like recoup exactly what they thought they lost just by selling now on this, like, you know, this bubble we're seeing now.
Yeah, and I just don't know, because this really crept up on us. There wasn't a big media push. There wasn't really something to look at and say, oh shit, this is why this is happening. There was no run-up. It's just happened, and it's all been done without any major crypto investment things. There's not been like any, I don't know, some weird thing where it was like, oh, Blingus got $300 million from Chris Dixon's asshole. We didn't get anything like that this time. And so it's like, what is happening? I don't like it and I don't trust it. And the real, that's actually, I think, going to be the big thing. Will the result of this be that we see a renewed amount of investment in cryptocurrency projects? Will we see a sudden influx of money into the industry? Or will venture stay out of it? Will venture stay out this time? And it really comes down to Andreessen Horowitz. Will they invest this time? Will this be their call? Because they've put a lot of money into AI. They've really spunked their load all over AI at the moment. Will they return to crypto? Because if we start seeing the same thing where it's like Andreessen Horowitz invests in a crypto company, they create a token and it liquidates right into Coinbase, then we're back, sadly. We are back into the big scam. And I think we might go to 100,000 or something like that. This is not financial advice. I don't know what I'm talking about. I fear for it all. But venture money is going to be very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Will we see the venture community start jerking to this? Are they going to be excited by this? Is this going to be a big deal? Or is this going to be something where venture capital just goes, I don't want to touch this shit. Nah, man.
Yeah,
I don't want to touch this bullshit. Right. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, but hopefully they're still so caught up in the AI hype that they're focused on that and won't get back into this.
Or they fear the SEC.
Yeah.
Because the SEC did in one of their multiple lawsuits, one of them against Coinbase. Actually, I think it might have been to do with their Wells notice. They actually did name 7 or 8 different tokens that they claim are securities. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Right.
But I don't know. I just tell everyone, be very worried if you start seeing venture money flow into this.
Right.
That's when it's time to freak out.
Also, if you're seeing the number go up right now and you're considering getting in, again, none of this is financial advice, like Ed has said, but if you're thinking of getting in now, even if you're just like someone who wanted to just like, you know, do a day trade or something, you're in dangerous waters right now. The time to have been doing that was last month. We're at that price level where it really could go either way. And whatever you're going to make, if it does go, up a little bit higher, is not going to be worth the losses you may incur if you don't sell at the right time. This was the absolute worst time to buy in last time around, and a lot of people bought at this 60,000 to 70,000 level last time, thinking it could only go up, continue to go up, and they were stuck at the very top and couldn't
sell.
To
be clear, it went from 69,000 to like 63,000 today. It has dropped that much that quickly.
Right. So I would be very cautious that, you know, this is the worst time to buy in. If you were in $20,000 ago, I would say, you know, you have a bit more time to figure out when you want to sell and when that perfect time would be and if the number would go back up. But right now, you're dangerously on the cusp of losing a lot, I think.
And also, my other thing is, if this crashes from here, all that ETF money is going to be very angry. That's why it could sustain. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they will just dump this right out. Maybe they will just be like, okay, fuck it. We got our 70K and we're done. Or maybe they push it from here because they want more ETF money. Like, that's really, this could get really interesting and annoying in equal measure. And I don't know. I find it very annoying because it does not feel like it's based on anything. And it feels like we will repeat cycles that got a lot of people hurt in the past. What's funny, though, is because of the way that the Gemini Earn settlement will happen, some of those people will make a lot of money. Because if they'd have withdrawn from Gemini Earn at the time, it would have been like 15, 16 grand. Now it's like 60,000. I think for their sake, that would be really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see, I guess. Let's actually pause the crypto conversation.
Fine.
No, because there's so much more to talk about. You know, you brought up how, you know, your podcast, let's name drop it again, Better Offline at betteroffline.com.
BetterOffline.com.
You mentioned how you recently did an episode with on Behind the Bastards, which is the like the main podcast that your podcast
Jewel in the Crown
network is part of, the Cool Zone Media. And you did this multi-part podcast episode on Steve Jobs. So let's actually talk a little bit about Apple, because since you last came on the show, the Apple Vision Pro came out.
Oh yeah,
$3,500.
Full
you know,
tax.
I will say, well, with less tax, I will say I was a little bit surprised that maybe Apple was gauging the interest around it and how much to put into it, but other than that, like initial like launch celebratory like ads and stuff like that, they really haven't been pushing it that hard, honestly, from what I've seen at least. Maybe I've been just resisting viewing advertising around it, but you know, they immediately, life went on and Apple's got their other line of products they continue to knock out. They just, I think I heard just as much about the new M3 MacBook Airs that just launched.
Yeah, it was, so I bought a Vision Pro.
Oh, you have one. Interesting.
I did an episode of Better Offline about it.
Oh, everyone's got to check that out, including me. So tell us about it. What do you think?
It's very annoying. Because there are times where you use it and you're like, this feels like the future. Like, you put it on and you have like an 150-inch looking screen. It's huge. It looks amazing. And then you get a fucking headache. I was on a plane using it, got a headache. I'm like, great. I got like halfway through Dune. And even if I had not got halfway through it, I would have had to charge the battery or replace it because it only has a 2-hour battery life. Selecting things sometimes doesn't work. If you're in a moving vehicle while using it, or a plane, you have to turn on travel mode. And sometimes when it does it, it doesn't put the thing straight, so you get your menus at an angle. It also does not have half the apps you need for it. And also, you're right, it feels like it kind of disappeared on us. That it was the biggest thing, and now it's gone. I don't feel bad for Tim Cook, but man, you gotta be pissed. You gotta be so pissed if you're Tim Cook and you watched all of the hype that Mark Zuckerberg made happen for the metaverse, which did not exist, and they actually put something out. And the and here's the thing, the Vision Pro is too expensive. They shouldn't have pushed it out like this. They should have done it as a developer edition. They're fucking scumbags for that. That pissed me off. Because this thing was released too early. It should have been better.
Right.
But at the same time, at least he built something. And I like mine a lot. But also, I don't know what to do. Like, when I use it, sometimes I get a headache. That's insane. I paid so much money for this fucking thing. I didn't always get a headache either. I just started getting them when I use it. Maybe I'm sick. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. No, I mean, is it the weight or is it just like the screen in your face? Like
I think it's the screen in my face. And I think it's when everything is too dark around you, your eyes feel just like burned by the bright lights. But also it's something about the weight on here. And it's annoying because you use it and it's like, if this thing did not hurt me, this would genuinely be the best way to watch movies. Because it's awesome. Like, I don't care. Cynicism aside, it's such a good way to watch stuff. I watched all the Slow Horses on it. Slow Horses is fantastic. Apple TV. Really good. Gary Oldman is a horrible old spy. Watching stuff on it is incredible. It looks amazing. And when the whole looking at stuff and clipping thing, moving stuff around, it's all very intuitive. It's awesome. But it's too expensive and too variable. And the fitting thing for it is complete bollocks. It's just you have to scan your face with your iPhone and then you get sent the wrong thing. And then allegedly you can trade it in. But I have no goddamn idea where to do that. No one tells you these things. I think Apple dropped it onto the market kind of as a developer edition, but were like, fuck it, let's just do it and then never mention it again. Like, there's a new operating system update for it that apparently just came out. I saw Mark Gurman tweeting about it. And I was like, oh, shit, maybe I should put it on. I'm like, when? When am I going to put this thing on? I need to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which I would love to play on my Vision Pro, except they don't have the PlayStation Remote app. It just feels like they didn't bother. If I was Apple, I would have had fucking Martin Scorsese and whatever film people talking about this thing. Because I will absolutely say, this is a faithful cinematic way of watching something. It feels like being in a cinema. Hmm. It really does. If I was a big time movie head, this would be so good. And I feel like Apple could have also had a budding concert thing for it. I've watched a few YouTube concerts on it. Few Queens of the Stone Age concerts. Incredible. It looks so good. It's so immersive. The focus it gives you. It's so cool. But then your head hurts. Or then a menu breaks. Or then you try and use the on-screen keyboard, which does not work properly. And you're just like, ah. Could you have not kept this in the oven for another year? Like, it's just, it's so frustrating watching a company half-ass something and then make $700 million.
You know, I'm pretty sure they launched it because they were like, we got to get this out there. We've been working on it for 10 years. You know, I was really prepared for this to like become a thing that like people were like the hype around it and Apple pushing it was so much that people were going to, you know, fall into buying this really expensive piece of gear that was going to, you know, perhaps not be actively developed in a few, you know, in a year or two. But it seems like Apple is even like, you know, if you really want this, it's there for you. But we're not going to like overly like we're not going to promote it to the point where you feel like you have FOMO if you don't have it. Like you're not missing out if you don't have it. Like I'm almost shocked.
You're right, though. They've been kind of demure about the whole thing. It feels like they put more effort into AirPods. Like it's strange. But also,
I'm not even complaining about it, though. I like that they're doing that, because I don't think, like, if you bought it, you're someone who, A, has the money, and, like, you know, it was for your work or something, whatever, the reason you bought it.
That was my justification.
Right? And you were gonna buy it anyway. Like, you weren't convinced. Like, it didn't take, like, the pushing for someone to, like, make you, you know, buy it. You bought it because you were gonna buy it anyway. So, like, I was really concerned that this was gonna be, like, a product that, like, that had this like cult around it that people were going to feel compelled to have to buy. and it just didn't happen. And I can't complain. Thank you, Apple, for not doing that to people.
But at the same time, they released a half-finished product.
Right, right. But that only really screws over the people who had the money to buy it to begin with.
But also, yeah, I mean, fuck us, right? But also, here's the thing. When you use, it's the first thing I've used in a while. In like, I can't remember the last time I used something. I'm like, wow, I live in the future. Sorry, here's my cat's asshole, everyone. Check him out. So it's the first thing I've used in a while where I'm like, this feels like the future. I feel like this is actually cool. It is not consumer ready. It is so early. But at the same time, watching movies on this is fucking sick. It is absolutely sick. It really is. I sat talking to my fiance, typing away on my magic keyboard, watching a Queens of the Stone Age concert. I was like picking shit. It was fantastic. I was sat on the couch, one of my other cats. And it was just like, I was like, this is so cool. Why can't it always be this good? And I hope they fix it. But at the same time, why have I have to pay to like beta test it. But at the same time, like whatever. I got it. I got an episode out of it. I got a newsletter out of it. My friends come over, they see it, they want to play with it. They now no longer have to buy it. It's great. Everyone wins except me. No, I'm actually very happy with it when I've used it. And I feel like once they add PlayStation Remote to it, I'm going to use it a lot more. Like a lot, lot more. Right. And also, it's really good as a second screen for the laptop as well. Like I've written thousands of words in it. It's brilliant. Like the focus you get from this thing is incredible.
I do have to try it still. I have to get to an Apple store and do a demo just to see what it's all about. Because, you know, I do think it could be something. You know, but here's one thing I want to bring up before I forget, because this has been my criticism about it. I think, you know, the whole, like, VR, AR, headset, glasses, whatever these different companies are coming out with. In Apple's case, it's an AR/VR headset. I do think they're fine products for what they are, for those specific use cases. And like, if you're, there was this at CES this year, there was this AR glasses company that I tried out. Real Glasses, that's the name of the product. And they're basically promoting it as like, this is for gaming and like movie watching. And I think that's fine. Like they weren't like doing what Apple was trying to do, where like they're trying to claim that this is going to be like how you do that. This is just how it's going to be in the future. This is how you're going to do computer work in the future. You're going to live your life in this device.
Apple, I want to push that back. I don't think Apple was ever advocating for that. They had to sell this fucking thing. That's just the way they... I think it was the worst sale they could possibly make.
Well, they're not promoting... In fact, they pulled back on any sort of promoting on the real use cases for this thing, at least right now in the current world we live in, and that's gaming. Like, they refused to promote this as a gaming device because they didn't want it to be in that same sort of category as, like, you know, the Meta Oculus, whatever the hell they're calling it now, the Metas, and then these other companies, like the Real Glasses I mentioned. They were, like, adamant about it not being pegged as a gaming device. And to me, it's like, that's the use case for these right now. That and
I actually
like you
disagree.
Said,
what they should – well, I don't think – they did some gaming stuff on it, but I think one of the reasons they didn't do too much is they couldn't get the buy-in from them. If Apple was actually smart, what they would say is, okay, this is the best television in your house. This is the way you will consume visual media going forward. It's too expensive. It's ridiculous. Oops, sorry. Wheeled him a cat there. It's what you get for being up my ass all day. They would have focused heavily on the entertainment side. They didn't because I don't think they got the buy-in. But what they should have done was say, okay, PlayStation, Xbox, we have all of the remote play, kind of like back, you know, the backbone, the thing that clicks onto your phone that you can use remote play. They should have had, oh my God, there's some horrible thing now if you do.
What did you just do?
I just did something with my hands. I never want that to happen again. How embarrassing.
For people listening to the podcast, you heard, I was going to say this before, when you said, there's my cat's asshole, I wanted to let people know who listened to the podcast that that wasn't some sort of English expression. That was actually...
I shoved my cat's asshole.
But what you're talking about here was you just did some like hand movement
and it
Skype
did, like,
gave you like confetti or something.
Yeah, what the hell? That's horrible. But I think had Apple should have just been like, this is the best entertainment device in your home. You can do word processing on it. It is a big spatial desktop. This is cool. They shouldn't have showed people walking around. That was a mistake. I would never use this in a room with another person. I'd feel weird. I feel very strange. Wouldn't like it. Like, Rand Fiance put it on and I immediately felt guilty. But they should have just really heavily focused themselves on building this out as an entertainment thing to start with, because that would be the easiest thing to do instead of trying to make it something for everyone, because the entertainment stuff on it is absolutely banging. It really is cool. It's really great. I have watched movies on this and been like genuinely astounded. Like, I'm pretty hard to impress and I've just been like, wow, this is actually really cool. And then I get a headache and I think that might have been the darkness thing, but it's just very silly because there are so many open goals they had that they just missed. And I think it's part of a larger technological problem, a larger problem in the entire tech industry. It goes to AI, it goes to crypto with all this, which is, I don't think any of the people in charge actually do human things. I don't think they interact with regular people. I don't think they understand what regular people do. I don't think they realize that regular people don't want to do spatial fruit ninja. They want to do big screen PlayStation. They want to watch movies. They want to stream their games.
Right.
And it's like,
I'm shocked that, you know, this generation doesn't want a giant Word document in front of their face.
But it's the thing,
Apple Pages and numbers that they could touch. They don't want to.
But it's not even that, and they should have sold it as a new kind of screen. But they're fucking stupid. I don't think any of these people speak to real people anymore. Why else would everyone be so angry about this thing?
Yeah, I also think that the early adopters who were out there doing their videos didn't help things for Apple. I know that's out of Apple's hands, but a lot of them out there with their Apple Vision Pro in like the car, driving the car, while on the subway, while getting married.
None of those were real. All of those videos were fake.
Right.
Every single one of them.
But it was, I think it was very bad press for Apple Vision Pro. You don't want to peg the device as, oh, you own this and you're one of those guys, you know?
Yeah, I just find it very annoying because you can really see where it could go. And you can see that they have no interest in speeding that up. They're just kind of like, well, you fucking bought it now, dickhead. Enjoy watching For All Mankind. I don't know what that show is. It's just like, they even had a PS5 controller in the commercial. That's what really angered me. I just want to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on this thing. I'd be so happy. Apple, I'll write whatever the fuck you want. Please give me PS5 remote. I don't know.
Right,
it's bitter.
Right. Well, let's actually, if you have some more time, spend just a few moments, because we talked a lot about crypto in the beginning. Makes sense. This is scam economy, mm-hmm. but more than I thought we were going to. Do you have a few more minutes to talk a little bit about AI hype site? The AI
I do.
Hype
I have,
cycle.
I have a little bit of time. Yeah.
Cool. Perfect. So, you know, I feel like you actually talk about this a lot more in your newsletter than you have so far in your podcast, but your podcast is just launched, so I mean, I'm sure you'll get there. But in your newsletter, you've been really on the AI hype beat, and everyone can find that at it's wheresyoured.at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I knew I remembered it correctly. So what is your feelings about this AI hype cycle? Because I've explained to people who listen to this show where I am on AI, how it's clearly not crypto in the sense that there are use cases for AI. However, the same hype around it of people trying to sell it as something it is not, how it's going to replace everything. I mean, I even hate that name AI for this. It's not artificial intelligence. It's just not. These are language models that pull data off the internet and other data points and basically are sort of sometimes pretty good at making it sound, making all this, like, taking all the stuff and making it sound human based on what you ask it. It also fucks up a lot of the time. Generative AI content, like AI created quote unquote art, photos, videos, just basically takes the data it's trained on and just figures out based on what the person's asking for, how to give it to them, but also by stealing a lot from the artists that it was trained on. Like, this isn't something really all that smart. A lot of it is actually sort of automation, which we've had on the internet for actually, you know, decades before this whole AI was even a thing in this, you know, this current hype bubble we're in with it.
I mean, you say there are use cases. What are those? Because that's the thing. We've had ChatGPT for over a year now, and let me tell you something. I could not tell you why I'd use it. And I'm an idiot. I will go and fuck with things for hours for no reason. I will find the fun. Can't find it with ChatGPT. ChatGPT, the most common thing I've found with it is that it will not do the things I need it to do. I will ask it to do boring document work. It can't do it. Oh, you're not using the right prompts. Fuck you. That's not my problem. This should work. This should work easy. But the biggest thing is, right now, generative AI is a fun doodad, but there are no real use cases.
Oh, I have heard from quite a few, developers and programmers that they are able to save time by getting it to output, a base code. I'm not a programmer, so I don't know the exact terminology, but they're able to save some time by getting down the base level stuff for when they need to code a certain app or, you know, feature on a larger product. So I've heard it's a time-saving
sexual
mechanism.
Sexual autocomplete.
I mean, that's what I mean, though, where there are some use cases, but which is unlike crypto, but it's nowhere near this, like, life-changing, you know, workers are going to lose their job level. I mean, workers will lose their job based on the hype, but they actually won't be replaced by anything that can take over the job they were actually doing.
I don't think that people realize how perfect humanity is and how the prevalence of hallucinations will kill this so fast. Everyone was losing their shit over Sora, the AI-generated video product from OpenAI. You'll notice, by the way, that they've yet to open that up to everyone. Probably because it's insanely expensive to do, but also what it creates is horrifying. It's great if you're one of the many tech guys that look down at their phone while watching TV, but when you actually expect it to create something that doesn't look like a Lovecraftian horror, it doesn't look great. And these people are saying, well, this is the early days. In 5 years or 2 years or 1 year, it will be better. The problem is that the world around us does not have hallucinations. If I am watching a video and I see a guy has 6, 7, 8 fingers, or if I see a cat has a third leg that pops out, even if that minuscule detail is off, that will make me feel upset, and it will make viewers feel upset as well. On top
there
of
better
that,
be a storyline reason for that cat to have eight legs, otherwise it's out, yeah.
But also, you'll notice this, despite all of this prompt generation stuff, even if you somehow perfected it, you can't edit any of this shit. You can't change anything in it. Same way you can't really edit any of the AI-generated images. And you'll notice that they still haven't worked out how to make AI-generated images do text properly. That is the hard limit. The hard limit is math. Because the big thing I always say is artificial intelligence is not intelligent. It does not know anything. It does not know that a monkey has two arms, two legs. Pardon me. I'm turning into a generative AI.
Yeah, but same. Yeah. Hold on.
Sorry, I'm only coming on. I don't know what a monkey is. But it doesn't know that. What it does is it knows what is tagged as monkey in its data set, and then it puts together a composite of what a monkey would look like. As a result, it will mess things up because it doesn't know. It doesn't know what a monkey looks like. It just knows what it is told and what it has been trained on. These things can, until they reach AGI, average general intelligence, which would allow them to think for itself, these things will be hard capped in their capacity to do things. And I don't think people realize how big a deal that is. And also that we're not at the beginning. This is like 20 years of AI work that has got us to this point. We're at the top of the S curve. These magical new things keep popping up. Before Sora, there was a company called Pika that came out a few months beforehand. Their demos looked so good, and then you actually used it, and it was so bad. It was so shit. I tried to get it to do like a raccoon with a gun, and it could not get a raccoon to happen.
One of the more amazing things too is like they'll say like, oh, we just typed in like this sentence, like woman walking down the street, and look at this amazing thing that like this generative AI came up with. But it's like, hold on. The use case for this, like in terms of like it actually
comes down to use cases.
And the use case for this, though, in terms of it actually being revolutionary or whatever, in the AI industry scenario, is like, oh, this replaces like filmmakers or actors. But like, if you're a filmmaker, like, you're very specific in what shot you need. Yes. So if it's adding its own creativity to give you whatever the hell the output of that specific data point it grabbed at that moment in time and gives you that, like, the AI people may think it's amazing how it thought up, you know, it didn't think anything. It's amazing that it, you know, came up with this all by itself from a simple output. But it's like, that's also really bad because
imprecise.
Yes. People who would actually use this to create something, like a filmmaker, if they were to ever use this, want something really specific for their script or storyline. And if this thing is making up its own shit based on the data point it's grabbing at that exact moment, then it can't even be used for that.
And what's insane is the argument is always it's early days. It's always like, well, it will be more precise in the future. No, it won't. Text is relatively easy. And they still can't do that right. It still hallucinates. And I saw a Wall Street Journal article made me laugh, and it was like, yeah, OpenAI and Anthropic moving forward with plans to sell into the enterprise despite hallucination problems. And the only idea they had for dealing with hallucinations was to limit the willingness of the generative AI to generate answers. They were just like, well, if we tell it to not answer when it's not confident, it won't give a hallucination. But then someone else was quoted as saying, yeah, but if we do that, it won't answer at all. It'll just start saying, I couldn't possibly. I'm sorry. I just not for me, thanks. And it's just really funny because I think the wheels are coming off this stuff. I think people are realizing that while there are apps that have integrated AI that are kind of cool, there are consumer apps that you can automate certain customer service things with, that's kind of cool. None of this is backing up the massive amounts of money that have to be spent to keep doing this generative AI.
The funny thing is, you mentioned the customer service thing, and I was reading a story recently that I forget what airline, some airline was using an AI chatbot to do customer service.
That was before generative AI. That was 2022.
No, this was recently. No.
The lawsuit was recently.
Oh,
the lawsuit was recently settled.
Okay.
That one was. However, don't worry, I've got an anecdote for you. There was a British firm called DPD, I believe, that did a generative AI chatbot, and someone convinced it to do a song about, no, a poem about how shit DPD was, and they managed to make it swear, and they had to take it down immediately. It's so cool. It's so cool this shit keeps happening as well. It's driving me a little insane, kind of like crypto, because you're kind of like, what does this do long term, though? What is the actual use case? And people are just like, automation.
Right. I mean, to me, the concern here for this, in terms of like the equivalent concerns I had with crypto, here my concern is that people are believing the hype. And they think this thing is actual artificial intelligence. Like, you see people, like, you know, get mad about certain output as if, like, oh, this is dangerous. Like, Elon Musk constantly does this. Oh, it won't say it's okay to misgender someone if it's going to, save. Yeah,
Google Gemini has said that George Washington was Chinese. That's very woke. I don't like that.
Yes. The thing is, they think, like, and I don't know if Musk himself actually thinks this, but at least his fan base thinks that, like, oh, like this intelligent robot was programmed to actually believe that George Washington was Chinese or whatever. But that's not what's happening at all. The thing is just so stupid because it's not artificial intelligence. It's just grabbing data points, mangling it all together and just spitting out whatever with the intent of at least sounding like a human is writing the sentence without actually any concern for what is actually in the content of those sentences. And that's what you get. This isn't dangerous because there's no thinking behind it. There's no intelligence behind it.
It is dangerous, but not in the way people think.
Right,
it's
yes.
It's actually very dangerous for generating a lot of crap and for generating spam and for generating scams. Voice cloning is very bad fucking news.
Well, those are the use cases to worry about.
Like crypto, the biggest use case is crime.
Scams, misinformation, that's going to be big once it's already there, but once, people start really outputting it to, like, put politicians in, different situations. I know there was this story just earlier this month about a generative AI Joe Biden voice used for robocalls in New Hampshire where the AI Joe Biden, without letting people know, was AI Joe Biden. It was presenting itself as the real Joe Biden, like a real campaign message from him, calling New Hampshire voters, telling them, oh, don't go out and vote in the primaries. You got to save your vote for the general election, which doesn't make any sense. But, common people might not know or understand. They're not in this political bubble, this tech bubble that certain people are in, like you and I are in, so they don't get it. I don't really care about Joe Biden in the New Hampshire primary, but that was a test case, a sneak preview as to the horrors that are to come.
And even then, I think that there is a hard limit. I think that the voice cloning stuff could be very scary, but also the actual amount of effort you'd have to go to. It's going to allow certain people to do specific kinds of crime quite well. But even then, there is going to be a hard limit on it, because even if you're using 11 labs to clone someone's voice, there is a fucking paper trail. You can't do a hard copy of that. I mean, you probably can, but still, it's not as easy as...
They've been pretty good at finding the more viral cases of people misusing those voices and, like, finding out exactly which account they had on 11 labs and shutting them down. So I will hand them that. They've been pretty proactive on that level. But there is that paper trail, like you said, much like crypto, where people think that they can just do whatever they want and there'll be no paper trail, when there absolutely is a paper trail.
I don't know. It's just, if AI was doing what it's doing right now and it wasn't costing the moon to do so, I would be a lot less cynical. But there is just billions of dollars sloshing into new data centers, into the amount of energy and compute needed to do this. And then you're like, what does it actually do? What is the actual end point? I can tell you what Siri can do. It can misunderstand me 3 times and then do what I want it to, like play music sometimes if it understands. Maybe they'll improve Siri with generative AI. Great, cool. Note that Alexa and Siri and all those things have very rarely made. In fact, Alexa lost a lot of money for Amazon. Most AI things have not made any money. The difference is we haven't been spinning up new data centers and throwing entire zoos worth of animals into a fire to build the power necessary to keep these things going. And they're going to keep spending money. And on top of that, all of these companies are ultimately beholden to the bigger tech entities. Microsoft invested $10 billion in OpenAI. Most of that money was done in cloud credits, which will then funnel right back into Microsoft as revenue. Same deal with Anthropic. Google put $2-3 billion in, and mysteriously around that time, Anthropic agreed to use Google Cloud as their exclusive platform. So yeah, the big tech companies want to push AI because they want every startup to integrate Claude or ChatGPT so that they're able to funnel that money right back up their own assholes. The only reason that this is being done is to make more money for the tech ecosystem. They didn't come up with a use case. They're just trying to push it through. Anyone see the Super Bowl ad for Copilot?
I actually did not see that, though. But
so there was a minute-long commercial for Microsoft Copilot, and one of the things in there was it was like classic logo for Mike's Trucks, or like Mike's Truck Repair. And three of the logos successfully said Mike. So let me tell you, when you actually type that in, the result is it's like Ikes. It's like they can't do writing correctly. Another one of the things they did was like write the code for my 3D open world game. The fuck is that gonna? What does that command do? Like, actually, I wonder what that command does. I've got to look that up. But that's the thing. That's the thing, though. It's like they couldn't even for a $7 million commercial during the Super Bowl, they could not come up with a use case.
Yeah, well, Mike's got a logo, I guess, that even though the output might vary.
Like that. Like, that's the thing. They just lied. There's nothing coming out of it that's useful. And this is the future. This is the future, baby. This is the new thing. What does it do? I don't know, and neither do we. Like, I don't fucking know. I'm Satya Nadella. I've got to make billions of dollars for Microsoft. There was one, it was like, generate storyboard images for the dragon scene in my script, ... And it generates all these pictures. Now, I'm not sure what that would actually do, but let's type it in. Generate storyboard images for the dragon scene in my script, ... Enter.
Let's see.
And what's going to come out of it? I'll try to create that. And now I have to sign in. Okay, I'm signed in. I need to type this in. Generate storyboard images for the dragon scene in my script.
I'm actually very interested in seeing what it does.
And it generated dragon scene storyboard. And it's just generating generic stuff. Yeah, wow. It generated a storyboard, all right, for... I wonder, can I share this with you, Matt? Could you put this?
Yeah, drop it.
Let me just drop it in the chat.
And I'll throw it up on the feed. This is what came out of it. Video.
This is what came out of it.
All right, let's see.
So I guess that this would generate. Write code for my open world.
So this is the output photo wise of the storyboards. You know, this is the issue that I mentioned earlier. Like, if you have a very specific, you didn't give it specifics, yet it somehow came up with very specific storyboards. Like, there are certain types of people in there in certain dress, like the type of medieval fashion they're wearing or whatever. The number of dragons, like, you didn't give them this information, yet it made it up.
I'm laughing because I typed in write code for my 3D open world game, which is the exact text from the commercial, and it is currently writing what looks like a plan for a game.
Oh, that's not what you asked it for.
Number one, conceptualize your game. Define the theme, setting, and gameplay mechanics. Number two, choose a game engine. This was a $7 million commercial showed to millions of people. This isn't code. This is trying to make me look at Unity's beginning 3D game development course. This is actually what pisses me off about the tech press. This should be the actual news. It shouldn't be that Microsoft had a commercial. It shouldn't be that Copilot exists. It should be that Microsoft is fucking lying. That they are spending money to lie to you. You are being lied to. They are liars. But no one gives a shit. No one fucking cares. Also, what's interesting with this dragon picture is I don't appear to be able to zoom in on it or download it. So it's just like, I just have like a very low resolution series of pictures that I can't export in any way. That's cool. I'm so glad that I use Microsoft Copilot to do this. This will help me with my dragon plot. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, what am I meant to do with this shit? What am I meant to do here? Why am I the one who's saying this stuff? There should be other people. I'm not a journalist. I'm a blogger. I run a PR firm. I've got other shit to do. But this feels like the base journalism that people should be doing. But they're like, no, AI is the future. McKinsey should be fucking happy. They've got a new thing to sell reports on. But here, you know what? I actually do kind of feel like I did with the crypto stuff. I actually do. Because now I feel insane. Now I feel insane about this. I feel like a crazy person drinking crazy juice. I just write code for my Open 3. I thought it was going to try and build code there. I thought it would at least fudge together some code. I just,
yeah, that's pretty bad. I thought it would at least attempt.
I thought it was
going to
give me some weird
shitty
code.
Yeah.
Like just like some, like I don't know anything about coding. Like would I compile that somewhere? I don't know. I'm going insane in real time now. I really thought that that would generate code. I really thought the code would come out. I really thought. It's just it feels like we're being laughed at.
Right. We even thought better of it just now as people who are very skeptical. We thought it would at least give you something that would resemble, because you know that's what I was talking about before. How it's really good at formulating sentences that sound human, even if the content isn't good. So you would assume that if that's what it's very good at, it would have given you code, even if the code was a bunch of gibberish. It would try to at least make it look like code. Like, so you, like, if you were in a movie pretending to be, like, you were an actor in a movie playing a computer hacker, you could throw this up on the screen so it looks like you're hacking the system.
And
yeah.
It would probably be, like, useful code.
but you also can't even do that. You can't even do that.
Even then, I don't know what I expected, because how would it possibly know anything that I'm saying? It doesn't know what 3D world, open world game I'm building. Yeah. And also, this is a public company. Are they allowed to just fucking lie? I guess they are. I guess that's what we do.
Well,
it's always good to come on here. I was like, my brain always feels like I always get a little bit special kind of mad. I miss coming on here.
I miss having you on. I didn't realize how long it's been. We can't make it that happen again. You have to come on much sooner.
I'm always game. I'm always
Sounds good. We'll definitely have to do this again real soon. I love how we sort of went off the rails here at the end, just trying out different
basic journalism.
Yeah,
that's what it's called. We reported the news, to quote the newsroom.
Oh man, well, Ed Zitron, like we were just been talking about, it's been an absolute pleasure. We cannot wait another year to have you on this show.
You won't have to.
Let everybody know, because you got so much going on now. Let everybody know all the things you'd like to promote. I know there's the newsletter, the podcast. I don't know if there's anything else you're doing, but if there is, let them know. Right here, the floor is yours.
So,
go ahead.
BetterOffline.com. You can find basically everything. I bought that domain name and I pointed everything to it. Where's your ed.at? Jesus Christ. Need to get that one right. And I dropped those actually into the chat just now as well. So people can just copy paste it. No, I love coming on here. It's always good.
This was
the show when I predicted that Voyager would collapse.
Yes,
if you remember, like a few months before Voyager fell apart.
Yeah, baby. things are always happening on here, and things are always happening now over on Better Offline too.
That's right.
What's your next episode going to be about? Can you give us a little sneak preview?
It comes out tomorrow. Actually, it's going to be about what the hell happened with the metaverse.
So if you're listening to the podcast version of the show, by the time you're listening to this, it's going to be out already. So go check it out.
And we also have some really cool episodes coming up. We have a sequel to The Rot Economy that we worked on, just recorded that yesterday. And on this Friday, I'm recording with Molly White. We're going to do an episode on what the hell Wikipedia is.
Because
it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of people use Wikipedia without knowing how it actually works. And I feel like that might be really interesting. And Molly is a very dynamic and interesting person to talk to.
Absolutely. Agree on all accounts. Also, Wikipedia is like one of the last good things on the internet. Like it's a real throwback to how the internet should be. It's good that it's remained as popular and important as it is. 'Cause it's, you know, the perfect word for what we've been seeing. Everything we talked about on this show, the enshittification of everything online. It's really depressing to see. I don't know if I should even call it hope, but I'm interested in diving a little bit into what Google announced today, March 5th, 2024, in terms of how it's going to really start cracking down on.
Those of you on the podcast, you can't see me doing the jack off gesture.
Right. We'll have to see how they implement it. But they said they are going with the next search update. They are going to really crack down on these bulk AI for SEO purposes, content garbage. You'll see it all over the place, just mounds of keyword stuffed SEO,
so
AI generated content. It's been
not to leave you on a depressing note, but let me read you a headline.
Sure.
Google promises to adjust search algorithm to favor people first content. In a major shift, Google plans to revise its search algorithm to rank content crafted primarily for people rather than content designed to impress web crawlers and indexing bots. You want to know when that was from? August 2022.
There we go.
Google has been promising this shit forever, and I think everyone bought it hook, line, and sinker. You could bring me back in a month, which is when they say the Google thing will have happened.
Right.
I would love to be wrong. I doubt I will be.
Right. Well, maybe. The one thing different here that I can consider is that back in 2022, maybe Google still thought they could win the AI race. Now, in 2024, they're like, we're not winning this shit. Our AI has been at least a public failure from people using it and sharing how bad it's been. Maybe we should, if we can't join them, then we gotta beat them. Right? By just downranking all this shit. It's all terrible.
Well, we will see.
Right. Well, Ed, you'll be back on this show to talk about this. We'll have to check it out. Ed Zitron, right. Everyone, check out Where's Your Ed At, the newsletter. Check out Better Offline, the podcast. And you can find Ed Zitron on all social media platforms still, I assume. Just search Ed Zitron. It's probably you're on Twitter @EdZitron slash X.
On ratemynudes.biz, aka X. And zitron.bsky.social.
One of my favorite things that you do really quick is you screenshot every bad Twitter ad you see, and they're just bad. And you share. See, I don't actually see that many ads on there because one of the accidental benefits of being punished with the blue check mark is I don't see that many ads. But you do. The ads you're seeing are actually the worst. They're not even ads. They're not even advertising anything.
Gave you one to share. Yeah.
It's like, let me pull this up. Oh my God. So bad. Here, let me.
This is an ad that someone paid for.
Okay. So this is Vanessa, a blue check mark on Twitter with a paid advertisement. Her Twitter name is @IVBidden_fruit. Complete nonsense. Obviously a auto-generated bot or something like that. And this paid ad is simply, "Hello there, I like coffee."
This is the future.
You know, what is... Maybe it's purposely bad to get people to go to her profile and see what her...
I think it is an overwhelming scam system. I actually think that there might be something very weird happening here. Because that account, by the way, is already suspended.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Then that, it's not whatever I thought it was. Because, yeah, that
but
is
also,
weird then.
Isn't it very weird that Twitter is getting advertisements being bought by people who are immediately suspended?
Oh, yeah. I think I forgot where I read this. I think it was The Information reported it earlier last month, actually. Apparently, I forgot exactly what's in the report. People should go check it out. But there has been an uptick in people stealing credit cards and then running random Twitter ads using those credit cards. And I think, if I recall correctly, The Information report said that these scammers who would steal these cards were like using Twitter ads to test if the cards worked or something like that. I can't recall exactly the whole story. We'll have to go back and check it out. But that must be a part of why we're seeing these garbage ads. I don't know what the other reasons could be, honestly.
I don't know, and I'm too tired to imagine why now.
All right, Ed.
I got too mad.
Have a great night. This was fantastic. And
thank you so much.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Cheers.
All right, folks. Let's go to the we're going to go in, if you're watching live, I should say. We are going to continue with the show and take calls and questions via Super Chat. So don't go anywhere. But if you're listening via podcast and you just wanted to check out the Ed Zitron interview, either of those things is completely fine. I get it. I get it if you don't want to listen to me and the callers. But if you just were here for that, then this is where I say I'll see you all next time. Before I go, please, if you'd like to support this show, go to patreon.com/mattbinder. And become a monthly paying subscriber. What does that get you? It just really supports all the work I do. I do live streams every week. Multiple live streams every week. You know, if you're a scam economy only listener, you may be like, oh, I don't see the feed always updating. There's been a bit of a lull on the scam economy podcast feed in terms of scam economy specific episodes. I'm hoping to ramp that back up. I know I said that the last episode, but I'm hoping to ramp that back up. Especially right now with everything going on. But I do live streams every week about news, politics, and tech. I've been doing a lot of Twitter episodes on my recent Twitter reporting, so definitely check those out. I think I even uploaded one of them to the Scam Economy feed about the Twitter monetization scheme with Mr. Beast. So you guys might have already heard that one. There's been others that haven't been uploaded to the Scam Economy feed. And I'm planning on doing even more, much like Ed. I'll be launching a newsletter really soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. So if you'd like to support all that I do there, patreon.com/mattbinder. You could also support this show by going to youtube.com/mattbinder and following me there. You could also become a paying member there. If you are enjoying the content and want to give a one-off, like a little monetary fee to me, you can drop a super chat, and I will read all the super chats on the call-in portion of the show as well. You could also follow me at twitch.tv/mattbinder. I multi-stream there. And if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, you get a free Twitch Prime subscription every week. Every month, I should say. What does that do for you? Basically, you get to give your favorite Twitch creator once a month a paid subscription that costs you nothing more than what you're already paying Amazon for your entire Amazon Prime subscription. By not doing that, I don't care if you give it to me, actually. I prefer you give it to me. But if you want to give it to someone else you enjoy on Twitch, please do that. Because by not using your Twitch Prime subscription every month, you're basically letting Amazon keep more of your Twitch Prime subscription fees. You could force them to give a little bit of that to someone who creates on Twitch every month. So go do that if you're paying for Amazon Prime. You could also go to scameconomy.com for the podcast version of this show. It's also available at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you can review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, that would be great too. With all that said, if you are not sticking around or tuning in to the call-in portion of the program, you're just listening to the podcast, just listening to the Ed Zitron interview, this is where I tell you that I will see you all next time on the Scam Economy.